Hey, you guys, Tomes of Terror book review time once again. Today we are doing a sequel to a book that I did a long time ago. I think it was back in November, like mid-November of 2020. And that book was called The Nightmare Room. So if you want to go back and watch my review of that, this is actually the second book in the series. It's a trilogy called The Messy Man series. And this is the second one. This is called The Hungry Ones, by Chris Sorensen. The Nightmare Room came out in 2018, as I mentioned on that one, and it was kind of like one of the, you know, it was picked like by a bunch of different horror channels and stuff like that as like their one of their favorite books of the year. And it actually was a really awesome like haunted house novel. It's interesting because not too long after I did the review of The Nightmare Room, the author, Chris Sorensen, contacted me and asked if I would like the other two books in the series, which is this one, The Hungry Ones, number two, and number three, which is called The Messy Man. And so he very generously sent them to me after he saw my review, and he signed them and everything. And it's super cute. And look, he wrote in there, he drew a little ghost, which I thought was pretty awesome. Like, look at that. That's really awesome. Okay, so this came out like in 2019, I think. I am gonna say this is gonna be hard to talk about because one thing I will say, I'm not sure, I mean, it's hard for me to say because I actually did read the first book in the series before I read this one. So I'm not sure how well this book plays as a standalone. I'm sure you could probably still read it as a standalone, but I feel like if you didn't read the first one, there might be parts of it that are sort of unclear, or, you know, maybe you don't really get what the mythology is and stuff like that. So as I said, it's kind of hard for me to judge because I actually did read the first book, although it was longer ago than I probably should have, which I'll get into in a minute. I don't know. So I'd be interested to see if somebody that had just read this one or like read this one first, if they had any idea what was going on, because it seemed to me that you would really have to have read the first book to at least get full appreciation for what was going on in this one, even though the story of this one is pretty much, I don't want to say it's like completely different because like the mythology is the same, but it expands the mythology and it goes like in a lot of different directions I wasn't really expecting. That said though, I actually ended up really liking this book. I don't think it was as scary or as creepy as the first one, but it was for sure just as entertaining. The characters I think are kind of the highlight. Like I really, really like the way that Chris Sorensen writes characters, and that was definitely in evidence in this one as well. And plus I liked that, because you know, as I mentioned in my review of The Nightmare Room, which was essentially a haunted house story, although the entity wasn't really a ghost, so that was like kind of original. This one kind of takes that entity concept and like expands on it. So it's going to be really, really hard to talk about this one without spoiling stuff from the first book. So if that's going to be a problem for you, then I would recommend like not watching this, because I'm not going to, you know, I don't want to spoil every single thing in the story, but it's really, really difficult to talk about this one without spoiling some pretty major shit that happened in the first one. So you've been warned. I'm just saying there might be some spoilers. I'm not meaning to like ruin anyone's reading experience or anything like that, but it is kind of hard to talk about if you can't talk about what happened in the first one. So as I mentioned, the first book, The Nightmare Room, essentially just more or less straightforward haunted house story about a family, the Larsons, Peter and Hannah, and they've lost a son, Michael, to cancer, and they end up moving back to Peter's hometown of Maple City, which I think is in Illinois, and them ending up living in this old farmhouse that was owned by Peter's dad, and there being an entity in there that keeps coming out. At first, like, reveals itself on Peter's, you know, audiobook, because he's an audiobook narrator, just as the author, Chris Sorensen, is. And it kind of slowly evolves from there, and then it kind of goes back and forth in time between the modern day and between a kid that used to live in the farmhouse, and the two stories linked together. So in the first one, there's just essentially two kind of interconnected narratives. Now this one, he does something very interesting. So pretty much, I mean, from like the first few pages of this book, you get pretty much sucked in like almost immediately, because pretty much the first scene is there's this old motel in Maple City, just this rundown kind of roadside motel type joint. And this dude named Butch comes upon this place. It's called the Crossroads. And he basically has a shotgun and he blows away the 12 people that are staying at the hotel. And you're led to believe that there is something kind of making him do it, like controlling him in some sort of fashion. So after that opening, like I said, where 12 people just get blown away in cold blood. So that's, you know, starts with a bang, if you want to say that. Then it goes to this woman named Jessie Voss. Now, Jessie Voss has decided, and she's not really entirely sure why, and it doesn't really become all that clear until later on in the book, but she's decided that she wants to buy the Crossroads Motel, which I think it's like 2 years later. Like, she comes along and she sees this place, and obviously it's abandoned and like gone to shit now because this horrible tragedy happened there and nobody wants anything to do with it. But for some reason, she feels compelled to buy this place and fix it up and reopen it. So she does that. So like the first part of the book is her and her friend, and they're, you know, going through the process of fixing the place up. They've renamed it. They're calling it the Intermission Motor Lodge. And she's like really jazzed about it. And it's like, I don't know why, I just really got into, like, Jessie is a really cool character, and her friend Steph, who is helping her out, is also a really good character. So like I said, Chris Sorensen, again, very, very good at writing just likable, compelling characters that you really, like, come to care about, like, in a very short period of time, and you really want to see what they're going to do. You don't want bad things to happen to them and whatnot. Now, at this point, you know, there's maybe kind of little hints here and there that maybe there's something to do with, you know, this place being haunted, which, you know, if any place would be haunted, it would be some place where a gunman came in and blew away 12 random people, including some children, in an old motel. So there's kind of like hints of that kind of stuff happening, but you don't really get tied in with the first book until a car pulls up in front of the motel. And these are the first guests of the motel. Now, at this point, like I said, this is going to spoil some shit that happened in the first book a little bit, I guess. So I'm just saying, like, you know, I'm warning you again. So as I mentioned in the first book, The Nightmare Room, Peter and Hannah Larson, their son, Michael, has died of cancer. And he died, like, at some point prior to the events of the book. Now, when the car pulls up in front of the new Intermission Motor Lodge, the motel that Jessie has bought and fixed up, it's Peter and Hannah Larson in the car, and their son Michael is with them and is alive. Now, Michael had cancer at some point, but he is in remission, like he's recovered from it. So from that point forward, you know that this is sort of like an alternate timeline. Now, in the first novel, he did kind of hint around at, because of the way that the past story and the present story were linked, and then the way that that story ended, like with Peter, you know, doing what he did. So it kind of like placed the seeds of that type of idea where, I don't want to call it like time travel. It's not exactly time travel, but I guess it kind of is time travel, maybe. But yeah, so it's just kind of like playing with the idea of being able to be outside of time and being able to go back and change things. So when the Larson family pulls up and Michael is still alive and has survived his bout with cancer, you know that this is the same family from the first book, but they're a different version, like an alternate timeline version of them. Because like when they show up at the motel, this is actually, they're coming back to Maple City because of Peter's dad being in, you know, Big Bear being in the home and like not doing so well, and them moving back to the city just like they were at the beginning of the first book. But this is like an alternate timeline where their son did not die. So that's how that ties in with the first book. Now, we have still the entity known as Mr. Tell or Whisper. But at this point, him and the version of Peter that was in the first book have become sort of integrated. So it's almost kind of like, I almost was reminded a little bit of like a Venom type situation where it's just kind of like, he's not a person anymore, but it's an entity, and it's almost kind of like Whisper wants to do one thing, but Peter still has enough of his personality from the other timeline to know, like, to keep Whisper from doing like bad shit. However, there are also three other entities, just known as, I think, basically she's just known as Sister, and then she has a couple of other acolytes, I guess, that are, you know, just known as her brothers. And they're kind of like, I don't know, I've seen, like, I saw some other reviewers, like, compare them to vampires, which I guess they sort of are, but they essentially feed on ghosts. Is what they do. I think they're not, like, not allowed, like, they go around, like, in bone form, but they have, like, a living person that kind of carts them around and does their bidding, like, does things for them, because they can't do a lot of things for themselves, and then the person gets things in return, or at least they promise to give them things in return. So at this point, so that kind of ties back to the very beginning of the story where the dude Butch was like blowing away all those people at the motel, because what they do, like I said, they get living people to kill people to make more ghosts that they can feed on, because it's almost like they're feeding on their memories. They're feeding on souls, essentially, hence the name, the Hungry Ones. So not only do you have the Larson family, whose son Michael is now alive in this alternate timeline, and you have this woman, Jessie, who owns this motel, and her friend, Steph, and then you have this other dude that shows up at the motel named Wood, and he's kind of the guy that is now being sort of like the acolyte for the Hungry Ones, like carrying them around and like doing their bidding and stuff like that. So all of this kind of happens at this one motel, like this big kind of like supernatural paranormal showdown type thing that's going on. So as I said, this is a very, very different book than the first one. Like the mythology is the same. You still have, you know, these entities that sort of feed on souls or feed on memories or whatever. You have that going on, but it's a lot more expansive. There's a lot more stuff going on. I don't know if I'd call it like in the spirit realm, not exactly, but you do have some characters that like come out of their bodies and then can do things like, you know, in the realm, like where the Hungry Ones are, you know, so you have that kind of stuff going on. There's a lot of ghost type of shit, like people seeing ghosts. There's a return of the character of Ellen Marks, who I believe was in the first one, who was kind of like the little woman with all the black clothes that's kind of like a psychic, and she's real, what's the word I'm looking for? Who's real caustic and abrasive. And honestly, I really like that character a lot. She doesn't really show up until probably like the last quarter of the book. But yeah, whenever she shows up, she's super funny because she just kind of like, she's just so like brusque, like the way she talks to everybody. And she's like very no nonsense. And she's kind of like, I'm busy, leave me alone. Like, so I really, really like that character. So she doesn't show up till the last quarter, but like to kind of help figure everything out. But yeah, so as I said, I think the strengths of this are the character work and the expansion of the mythology from the first one in directions I didn't really expect. I did not expect there to be alternate timelines. I did not expect like this kind of, I just didn't expect it to go that way. And I thought that was really, really cool. As I said, it's a lot. The first book was fairly simple. Like I said, it being essentially a fairly straightforward haunted house story with like just a couple interlinking plot lines. This one is a lot more complicated in regards to like there being a lot more characters, and there also being a lot more entities, and there being a lot of like shenanigans going on, like interdimensional type stuff, almost to a sense where it's kind of like Clive Barkerian, I want to say, like not that extreme maybe, but in that ballpark. So I liked that a lot. As I said, the first one I think was creepier, like scary, because I love haunted house shit. So the first one was like creepier, scarier. This one was much more, not so much scary as kind of almost more like action oriented. I don't know if I want to say action oriented. That sounds kind of weird, but that's not exactly what I mean. But this one is a lot more concerned about like just the pacing. It's like there's some gory shit, there's ghost shit. It's kind of like there's some kind of funny, like over the top sort of imagery. Like there's this whole plot thing, like plot thread surrounding this big plexiglass cow that used to sit on top of the motel that kind of like communicates with people. It's like, not really, but it's kind of like that. So it's kind of like, so it's funnier. I mean, like, the first one had some funny shit in it too, but this one is funnier in the sense that a lot of the characters are kind of funny. Some of the situations are kind of strange and sort of funny also. So it's a little bit different in that regard, like less scary, more, I don't know, more propulsive, I guess, and just kind of more characters, more complex. But that said, it's like, I think I still like The Nightmare Room slightly better, but it's kind of hard to say because this one, even though you can tell it's the same author, because he's very, you know, he's an awesome writer, really. And it's like, he just has a really deft hand with like characterization particularly. And also in like, his descriptions are very vivid and things like that. So it's, and he's very good at pacing also. Like, he's very good at getting you to like sit down and like just read through the shit. Like, it's like, oh man, what's gonna happen next? Oh man, what's gonna happen next? So it's like, I mean, I think I remember like saying on the first, on the review of The Nightmare Room that I just like sat down and read almost the whole thing without even like realizing it. And I did a similar thing with this one too. This one is more, I think this one was like a slightly less than that because it was kind of more, and it's not episodic, but it's a little choppier because there's like scenes are like shorter, you know what I mean? But the pacing is like really, really good. And the ending is really, really good. You know, the ending of The Nightmare Room was also really good. So he really does stick the landings, which a lot of horror authors don't do. So, so props to that. Like, the endings are very satisfying. One thing I will say is that I wish, because I remember when I reviewed The Nightmare Room and I went back and looked, and it was November 16th, I think, 2020 of last year. So I read it in November of last year. And I said, oh yeah, I'm gonna have to read the second one. And then it was like a month or two later, and then he sent me the second one and the third one. And I was like, and I remember doing on my 2021 TBR, I remember saying, oh, I got the two books. That was in, you know, that was back in January. And I'm gonna have to read these pretty soon because I don't wanna like forget what happened in The Nightmare Room. And I will say that if you're going to read these, I would recommend reading them close together. Because although I did remember most of the shit that happened in The Nightmare Room, I kind of wish that I had read this. I mean, because I started reading it and I'm like, oh wait, was that, that was, and then I had to go back and like look at the first book to make sure. And as I said, I'm not sure if the second book works as a standalone if you don't know anything about the first book. I don't know if you'd be confused, but like I said, it's hard for me to say because I did read the first book, but I was a little bit disoriented at first when I started reading it because it had been so long since I'd read the last one that I didn't immediately remember all the details and I had to go back and like refresh my memory and stuff. So I will recommend that. If you're going to read these, and I really do recommend that you do because they're really good, read them in order. Because I think if you read the second one, you're just being like, what the hell is going on? Like, what, who are these people and what? I think you could still read it as standalone, I guess, but you'll get a lot more out of it if you read the first one first. Because if you don't read the first one first, you don't understand that the second one is like an alternate timeline. You know what I mean? And I think that's kind of like a big deal, like for you to realize that. So definitely read them in order if you're going to. I just wish that I had read them closer together, and it just made me mad that it took me so long to get around to reading the second one, because I think that it would probably, I don't know, at some point I think I'll probably, I mean, obviously I still have to read the third one, The Messy Man, and I'm not gonna wait as long in between this time, I promise. But I think what I'll do is at some point I'll do a reread of all three of them, like in one go, and then maybe I can do like another video updating. I don't know. That's maybe like farther down the line. But I definitely think that they all need to be read like in pretty quick succession. Otherwise, you don't get as much out of them. That's all I'm gonna say. So anyway, as I mentioned with The Nightmare Room, this is easily a 4-star read. It's super fun. It's not as creepy as the first one, but I just really liked all the interdimensional, like the demon shit, like the hungry ones are pretty creepy and scary. And I really liked the imagery of them, like the kind of the bones and they kind of like form themselves and shit like that. So it's like really, really cool imagery like that in there. I liked all the funny stuff. I liked all the build up with Jesse and getting all the motel together and stuff like that. For some reason, I really like, I really like stories about like house, like fixing up houses and shit like that. I don't know why that is. Maybe so, I don't know what it says about my psychology. But yeah, so yeah, so I kind of like enjoyed that kind of aspect to it too. And I really, really liked the tie-in with the first book because, as I said, it goes like in an alternate timeline kind of direction, like with some time travel-y kind of shit in there. And I thought that was really cool because I wasn't expecting that. So yeah, definitely, definitely good read. And I think you should pick it up. But like I said, read them in order, or at least like read them within a short time of each other so you don't like forget all the details. I think that's how you're gonna get the most enjoyment out of them. And that will do it for this Tomes of Terror book review, and I will see you guys on the next one. Bye.